dignitary shed.
Because we know
they'll cease to grow.
In fact, they'll soon be dead.
Oh, and yet we go ahead, painting the roses red.
A couple of weeks before Dimitri arrived in Boston, Celeste asked if I would help her make a short film based on Alice in Wonderland. She wasn't just taking advantage of my massive camera skills. She wanted to use my ridiculously cramped room with its weirdly slanted ceiling. I told her I'd be glad to help her film, as long as the filming didn't conflict with Dimitri's visit. I was assured it wouldn't. I mean, it's like no one wants me to enjoy his visit, I tell her when she calls to let me know that the only night she and her horrible friend Cindy can film is tonight. Deborah stands me up at the airport, Zuzu stands me up at the aquarium, even the fucking taxi drivers send us wandering aimlessly around town in search of the aquarium because they're pissed that we won't just hop in the cab and let them drive us to the aquarium. Like, I want to spend $10 going up and down one-way streets when it's just a five-minute walk. I swear to... Yeah, tonight. Fine. We decide to start filming around 6. It's a five-minute film, so we figure we'll be done by 8, which gives Dimitri and I time to shower together or separately before heading out to dance with his lesbian friend. Cindy shows up at 8:30. We decide to drive Dimitri to the club, drop him off, head back to my cramped apartment, make the film, and then I'll call Dimitri and meet him wherever he ends up. I should be able to meet him by midnight, giving me a full 2 hours to dance around in my shiny shirt and get him drunk enough to make out with. At midnight, I tell Celeste she has to leave. I don't even say goodbye to Cindy, who has spent all of her off-camera time insulting me in my admittedly tiny, uncomfortable bedroom. I call his phone and leave a message asking him to call me and let me know where he is. An hour later, I contemplate calling him again, but don't want to come across as needy. At 3:30, all I want is for the phone to ring, a trumpet flare, or a sitar version of Stay, Far Away So Close. I want the phone to ring, but only if there's a guy on the other end. I want the phone to crawl across the floor, lovingly nuzzle me, and say, "It's for you." There's too many qualifications, but still, I want the phone to ring. It does. Hello? Please be Dimitri, please be Dimitri, as if anyone else would call me at 4 a.m. Well, maybe Clarissa.
"Hey, it's Dimitri,"
he laughs. Lucky fucker is drunk.
"Where do you live?"
I give him directions for the cab ride back. An hour and a half later, he's sitting on the couch next to me. He tells me about $4 bottles of water and finding his people. Hot guys who excitedly dance to Kelly Clarkson. I want his people in bed, but they must wear headphones in public.
"I should probably head to bed," he says. "Mind if I crash in your room?"
"Of course not," I say. "Sorry it's so cramped in there. I'll come wake you up in a couple of hours." He gives me an odd look and heads into my room. I accidentally fall asleep on the couch, which means I fail to spend any bedroom time with Dimitri, and I get a stern note from the landlord about not sleeping with the TV on. I make us a brunch of homemade fettuccine. Dimitri chatters on about penguins and his boyfriend and taxicabs and dance clubs and my horrible friends, and when we're done, I wash the dishes and stack them in the drainer.
"You're so neat," Dimitri says. "What would you do if I made a mess?"
He grabs a pile of landlord's papers and scatters them over the floor. I shrug. "Wait for you to pick them up," I say, knowing his OCD will kick in and he'll be compelled to unmessify the floor. A few minutes later, he does. I really want to kiss him, and it is bugging the fuck out of me. I'm supposed to be a top, the control guy, but I find myself wanting to wait hand and foot on this nudge. He's adorable and everything, but he's not that hot. Am I becoming a middleman? A top guy who waits for a bottom to tell him to do everything? Shoot me yesterday.
"I'm bored," he says. "Mind if I meet my lesbian for dinner tonight?"
It is his last night before he flies back to Chicago. And yes, I goddamn mind, but this is his vacation, and I am so tired. And he has a boyfriend, and all I have is an awful room in an apartment I don't like, and friends I can't rely on. "No," I say, Of course not. While he is at dinner, I clean up the mess that Celeste and Cindy left after the film shoot. There are cards everywhere and a random plastic Easter egg. I don't remember what the egg was for, so I decide to open it up. Inside are 17 candy hearts, which all read, "Wise up." Dimitri is on the phone with the airline. It's snowing. And while the snow looks heavy from inside the house, I know it's not heavy enough to ground him here for another night. Dimitri is leaving to return to his, what passes for normal life. Landlord has offered to drive us to the airport whenever Dimitri's flight leaves.
Hello?
Dimitri asks, signaling he's finally through the robot barricade and talking to an actual living person over the phone. I stare at his bags because I think this will make him more comfortable than if I were to stare at him. I hate it when most people look at me while I'm doing something uninteresting, and because I'm neurotic and Dimitri is neurotic, I just assume that he feels the same way, so I stare at his bags, then his shoes, then his ass. In the days before wireless phones, my mother used to tangle the fuck out of phone cords during nervous conversation. She always had to be doing something with her hands. Her nervous behavior and my father's ascent into obesity are just a few of the reasons I'm glad I'm not biologically related to them. Of course, my birth father was a rapist, so obesity probably wouldn't be so bad. Rather than tangle the cord on the phone, Dimitri is playing with his pants. As he giggles something about,
"So you can't tell me whether or not the plane is leaving?"
His pants ride just low enough for me to make out a few inches of crack. I hope this is a signal. The snow will pick up, the pants will come down, we'll soon be making out, and I'll be running my fingers down that crack. And look at the bags, Adam, look at the bags! He hangs up the phone and repeats the conversation that I just half heard. He's impossibly cute. Whatever we talk about for the next hour must be fleeting because all I want to do is kiss him. I don't remember it. Then, it's time. It's time to head to the airport. Landlord gets the car running. We grab all of Dimitri's bag and head to the car. We should be at the airport and we're headed in the wrong direction. Maybe Landlord is helping me kidnap Dimitri. This idea would intrigue me, except that the landlord is a 60-something-year-old guy who likes to go to foreign countries and pick up young boys and do whatever he does. I don't share well, but we are not on our way to the airport. We are clearly at the T station. I'm tempted to say this isn't the airport, but this week has gone particularly bad in every way except for Dimitri, and I'd rather just spend some time on the T with Dimitri anyway. And before I have time to kiss him, say anything reasonably important or interesting, we're at Logan, the airport. Dimitri is leaving. The lady behind the counter won't let him bring his bags carry-on this time, so he checks them. I want to say how sorry I am that my friends let him down, because I'm used to them letting me down. That's no big deal to me, but I let them down just as often. I want to say I wish he'd had more time. I want to kiss him, follow him to the gate and onto the plane and back to Chicago. I could move my life to Chicago. Mortimer Velociraptor is there. Dimitri is there. I know loads of people in Chicago. Why, I could stop having absurd thoughts and just appreciate the view as another guy I like walks away.
Trigger, oh yeah. You need to know the situation.
You are not regular. I don't care if you shit every day at 8:45 a.m., spend from 9 to 5 in a cubicle crunching numbers and drinking coffee. The fact that you like 24 and Desperate Housewives makes you average, but average and regular are not the same thing. 5 inches hanging straight down may be average, but it ain't regular. 3 customers at work today asked for a regular coffee. 1 wanted a medium black house blend, 1 wanted a small house blend with 2 creams and 2 sugars, and 1 wanted a shot of espresso. Words failed me, but not as much as the word regular failed them. When a person writes a personal ad and he says he's a regular guy, I picture an obese black underwear model with blonde hair, purple eyes, wearing only a sweater vest and 6 Swatch watches. His ass has a door over the hole that says unleaded only, you know. Regular. I don't like regular people. My friends have style. Zuzu is adopting a dachshund against my advice, and because dachshunds are German, naming it Pup Ratzinger after the incoming Pope. Celeste uses a 1950s era medical kit as a purse, and even writes with pens shaped like syringes. Dimitri drinks ketchup straight from the bottle when he's nervous. My friends don't even have regular names. The landlord wakes me up at 5 a.m. to tell me my room is messy. I know this already. Why are you in my room anyway? I'm looking for dishes, he says. Try the kitchen. I roll over and fall back asleep. I dream I'm on American Idol, freestyling a Christian gospel-esque song while Billy Joel plays classical piano. I have this dream every Tuesday. It's a regular occurrence. I re-wake up at 9:30, have eggs and toast with my new roommate, an Australian woman who tests the effects of psychotropic drugs on schizophrenics. I call her Dr. O. At 10:30, I catch a bus to work. When I stand up to get off the bus, a complete stranger with piercing green eyes says, "Love your haircut." I stammer out a weak, "Thanks." He turns around and waves. His shirt says, "Future Fry Cook." The film version of my life has run out of extras. I am barely at work for half an hour when Clarissa calls. Twice. Fuck Clarissa. I should refer to her as Needy Smurf. She's been telling my coworker she's my girlfriend, and she constantly calls me back, which is remarkable only because I've never called her first. After an uneventful day of pouring coffee, I take the tea to Quincy to join Zuzu in her court-ordered charity work. We've been mailing books to prisoners. Every 2 weeks, we meet in the basement of a church in Quincy Center, approximately 3 blocks from the Kookaburra Canyon I used to work at. As I open the door to the church, I hear, "Adam?" And across the street is my beautiful ex-not-quite-boyfriend, David. "It really is you." I wonder if he is surprised at my haircut, the fact that I am wearing the shirt he bought me, or that I am entering a church. Turns out one of my illustrious former coworkers told him I'd moved back to era-fucking-zona right, I say, just after I had breast augmentation and took up drinking kerosene and lighting my belches on fire. He stares blankly at me. I am on the receiving end of this look more often than I care to admit. We exchange new phone numbers and soap opera stares until he has to go to work. When I finish my volunteer work, I head over to Zuzu's for dinner, then home to sleep. Alone.
You know, my darling, I can't stand to sleep alone. No sweetheart in the dark to call my.
Where is my future fry cook? It's 10:30 in the morning and I have no one but Augustine Burroughs and a creepy-looking woman with a banana peel sticking out of her shoe for company. I have audio slaves I Am the Highway on repeat in my Discman. I am about halfway through rereading Running with Scissors and I'm getting really into it when the bus begins to lurch. My eyes shake. A piece of hot dog omelet I had for brunch makes a mad dash for the outside world, but after a frightening 2 seconds of seeing the light of day through my trachea, it returns to my stomach. For only the second time in my life, I'm motion sick and have to put the book down. The first time I was motion sick, I was sailing from Jacksonville, Florida to Portland, Maine with my grandparents. I had a pleasant, smooth sail all the way up to my home on the Cape, but while we were docked in the Cape Cod Canal, I made the unfortunate decision to eat a large bowl of lobster bisque before we set sail in the midst of a really bad storm. That happened when I was 12. In the intervening 16 years, I haven't been anything close to motion sick. Before the boating trip, I was only vaguely aware of what motion sickness was. Kevin Harris, the friend whom my parents had basically adopted, was motion sick pretty much constantly. Even a brisk walk made him dizzy. When we were 13, my parents took us whitewater rafting in Maine, and during the car trip up there, we had to stop 4 times to let Kevin puke. On our way to take him whitewater rafting. The lurching bus brings me my first thought of Kevin in over a year. I'm thinking of writing down a few memories of him when the bus lurches again. No writing for me. I'm so focused on not being sick that I miss my bus stop, causing me to spend 3 minutes longer on the bus as it lurches through a stoplight. I hate lurching. If Ted Cassidy were still alive, I would cock slap him in the eye. When I finally make it off the bus, I am an octopus on rollerblades, a one-legged turtle surfing on an armadillo's back. Luckily, I work near a hospital, so if I do fall and get a concussion, a hot doctor is only a few steps away. Which reminds me, I miss Dimitri. I do not fall and get a concussion. Still, my head hurts. All the customers are either whispering or screaming. One manages to do both simultaneously. I am trying to figure out what the Lithuanian woman who speaks no English would like in her coffee when the phone rings.
Adam, it's Helga. I'm going to be late for work. My son is having a baby.
There are 3 things wrong with Helga's statement.
My son is having a baby.
1, boys do not have babies. 2, Helga does not have a son. 3, Helga is 17. So while it is possible that she could have hidden the fact that she had a son from me, the odds that her son is old enough to reproduce are fairly nil.
What? Mike is having a baby.
Whatever. How late are you going to be?
Maybe 10 minutes.
Helga never shows up to close the store. This is the 3rd week in a row that I've had to close for someone because another employee just didn't show up. My head hurts. I need to sit down. My son is having a baby and it is motion sick. If I sit down, I'll fall asleep. So I run to CVS to pick up some Coke. Plan on filling the Coke with our cherry syrup, because the CVS doesn't sell cherry Coke, but I accidentally add boysenberry syrup to my Coke. It's not as awful as it sounds, but it's close. The phone rings. I expect it to be Clarissa, as she hasn't called in nearly a day. A new record. It's not Clarissa.
Thank you for calling the MBTA,
the phone says. I have not called anyone. The recording has called me. I hang up the phone because I need to sit down, and I don't think I can handle sitting down and talking on the phone at the same time. I have to clean the espresso machine soon, but my son is ringing and his boysenberry is sick. I wanted to go to the Audio Slave show tonight, but boysenberry didn't show up to cover my shift, and CVS is motion sick. I didn't have tickets anyway. I've been listening to the radio all week to try and win. The last time the WBCN ticket load is announced on the radio, I call the station. Instead of Audio Slave tickets, they are offering tickets to see Papa Roach. No, thank you. The DJ announces that he has taken the last pair of Audio Slave tickets for himself, but to make up for it, he's going to play a half hour of Audio Slave music. I decide to crank him. I call up and ask if they still have Nirvana tickets available. He laughs and then hangs up on me. The espresso machine is still giving me a dirty look. Cleaning it will require getting up and moving. Instead, I call my house to check my messages. I don't have any. My voicemail is motion sick. My boysenberry son is ringing the espresso machine. The MBTA wants tickets to Nirvana.
Are you okay?
An unfamiliar woman on the other side of the counter asks. I lie. Yes.
What time do you close?
She asks. Between 7 and 8.
Yesterday I came at 7:15 and there was nobody here,
she says. Yes, I say, pulling myself up using the mini-fridge for leverage. If it's slow, we close around 7-ish. If we're busy, it's closer to 8.
But yesterday, at 7:15...
My son is a mini-fridge with tickets to Nirvana. I grab some boysenberry for leverage. I'm sorry, I say. Can I get you something to drink? Maybe a cookie? She shakes her head and walks away. I grab a peanut butter chocolate chip cookie for myself and begin to clean. Once the cookie has successfully voyaged into my stomach, I grab a lemonade from the mini-fridge. I add 4 spoons of sugar. It helps the medicine go down. And drink and clean and drink and clean, and it's 8:30 and I'm beyond late for getting home for dinner. I grab a slice of pizza on the way to the tea. The tea lurches. The pizza is made of aluminum and Velcro. I need to get off the tea.
Copley. Sweet, sweet Copley Station is next. I get off and wander around Newbury Street. Last time I was on Newbury, Dimitri and I were in the Hello Kitty store buying lollipops for one of his professors and one for us, and each of us took a Hello Kitty pop home. I still have mine. When I get home, I'll suck it away until I can suck no more. Goodbye, Kitty. You make me motion sick. I grab Dimitri for leverage, but he hasn't been here nearly a month. Fuck you, boys in Berry Street. Fucking with my memory. It's not long before I'm in Newbury Comics, wandering around the used CD aisles. Before I moved to Arizona, I was a CD collector. I wanted to own every piece of music I loved. I had over 1,000 CDs, and I listened to as many of them as I could, as often as I could. But since I moved back, about one CD. Modest Mouse's Good News for People Who Love Bad News. Last year, I lent it to Celeste. I haven't seen it since. I'd be bitter, but a year and a half ago, she lent me Kingdom Hearts. She hasn't seen it since. Tonight, I need music. I rebuy the Modest Mouse CD as well as the Best of Stone Temple Pilots. It's a total of $15. Not too shabby. I count the rest of my money. $1.80. 90 cents for the bus ride home tonight. 90 cents for the bus ride to work tomorrow morning. At the bus stop is a woman who smells like the MBTA and Nirvana. I wait behind her for 10 minutes while two fags in hot hats talk about something I can't begin to comprehend. The way they wave their hands make me motion sick. When the bus arrives, I get a transfer and shut my eyes. I wake up in Central Square. My head is a mini-fridge filled with boysenberry sailboats. I want leverage. The wind cock-slaps my face. I shake my head and look at the bus schedule. I have 45 minutes before my connection shows up. I open Running with Scissors and begin reading where I left off. In the morning, I feel my head clearing, all of my instabilities pouring out of my eyes and into the book about Augustine Burroughs' childhood. I didn't have a relationship with a pedophile until I was 19. My parents never left me with their crazy psychiatrist for more than an hour at a time. I'm the one in my family who writes crappy poetry, not my mother. My world comes into focus. Nothing is spinning anymore except the pinwheels that someone has attached to the back of a woman's wheelchair. I am content and ready for anything. Modest Mouse is singing, "The good times are killing me." A man motions for me to take off my headphones.
"Do you know what time our bus comes?"
he asks. "Our bus?" 9:45, I say.
"Good. Good,"
he says, inferring how much he's going to enjoy our special waiting time.
"Mind if we talk?"
I look closer at him, trying to see if he's a police officer, a family member, someone I've wronged, a hallucination brought on by too much boysenberry coke and motion sickness. There are tears in his eyes.
"I just need to talk to you about something,"
he says, and that's when I realize I'm sitting at a bus stop in the middle of Cambridge, about to have a conversation with God. God has cancer. God is HIV positive. God spent most of last Thursday night in church looking for answers, but all he got were more questions, and now he knows why. If you don't count my volunteer job of mailing books out to prisoners, I haven't been inside a church for years.
"I'm sorry,"
God says.
"I don't mean to bother you, but..."
And he begins weeping again. It's a quiet series of not quite sobs. It is to crying what hiccups are to breathing fire. I take my headphones off so I can hear him better. Should he resume speaking, I am sure he will resume speaking. He's God.
"I'm sorry, I'll be right back."
And God gets up to collect himself. Maybe I'm still dizzy. Maybe this isn't God at all, but some homeless weirdo who will hit me up for money just before our bus shows up. I dip my head back into Running with Scissors for less than a minute when I hear,
"I got you something to drink."
And there is God again. And he hands me a cherry Coke. Homeless maybe. Definitely God.
"I was in Vietnam,"
he says. I know this because according to most spiritual people and many sensible religions, God is everywhere.
This is how he can be both in the White House advising the President of the United States on how to get rid of Social Security and queers, at the very same time he can be sitting next to me almost sort of crying.
I died over there, but they brought me back. I didn't want to come back.
So, God is Buffy Summers after Buffy the Vampire Slayer was moved from the WB to UPN. I can almost hear him singing,
I was in heaven.
But you know, he's God, and some people believe there's God in everyone, so of course there's a little bit of God in Sarah Michelle Gellar. I try to imagine Xander, Willow, and Dawn standing around a grave, and this short, unshaven, vaguely ethnic-looking person climbing out of the grave and handing them each a cherry Coke. I am so deep in this vision that I miss something about drugs and death.
I've never done anything bad, he says. Anything. I'm always good, but everything is just so hard.
And only God could ever look me in the face and claim,
I've never done anything bad.
It's the whole infallibility thing. I want to say something comforting about the possibilities of the afterlife or reincarnation, but I figure he's just spent the whole day in a church being harassed by religious people. He's probably heard all the crap people pull out of their holy swag bags. So I mumble something about I'm sure there's some sort of plan, and he just stares at me. I look hopefully in the direction the bus should be coming from. I want to pray for it, but I don't think, given the situation, that it would do me much good. The bus will come when it comes.
I go to churches every day, and everyone listens to me like I'm important, but then they leave and I'm so alone, and nothing is better.
I take a really long sip of cherry Coke to keep from saying anything.
I'm a regular guy,
he says, and then,
here's our bus.
And here it is. On the bus, I sit near the front, leaving an empty seat next to me, but hoping he won't sit in it. He doesn't. He puts on his headphones. God is listening to Eminem's Lose Yourself. I put my own headphones on. Back at the house, Dr. O and landlord are discussing putting a party together for Alex, who's moving back to Columbia at the end of the week.
McDonald's?
Landlord offers. I pray he's joking, and then he laughs. God is so close, he has no choice but to listen. It's like I'm in his head.
Look, if you had one shot, one opportunity to seize everything you ever wanted in one moment, would you capture it?
You've been listening to Laughing in the Abattoir, Part 7, Regular Motion Sick, brought to you by the spinning teacups and all those other rides that loop and, oh, I don't even want to think about it. Intro music for this episode was Painting the Roses Red from Walt Disney's Alice in Wonderland. Incidental music included Pop Will Eat Itself's Wise Up, Sucker, Kelly Clarkson's Walk Away, Bat for Lashes' Sleep Alone, and A Spoonful of Sugar After Hours, which is a remix of Spoonful of Sugar from Mary Poppins by Allison Kaladna. Outro music playing now is Lose Yourself by Eminem, in case you weren't alive in 2003, to be painfully aware of what that song is. For more information on this podcast or other pieces of writing, please check out my website at www.crookedtreehouse.com, or you can email me meaningful, chalky, candy Valentine heart messages that pass through your mind at insafemode@gmail.com.